between Cal and Peanut, watching the show. She felt Cal's gaze on her. In fact, he'd been watching her too closely all day. Wherever she went, he was there, standing by but saying nothing.
What?
What? Peanut laughed.
You two are going to have to quit with the philosophical discussions. I can't keep up.
Ellie ignored her friend. What, Cal? She said, irritated. There was something in his eyes that upset her. She couldn't help feeling that he'd judged her and found her lacking.
Nothing.
If you've got something on your mind, you might as well spit it out. We've been friends long enough that I know when you're pissed off about something. What did I do? She expected him to smile at that, maybe make some smart-ass geek boy response, but he just stared at her. After a second or so, she started to feel uncomfortable. Finally, he smiled, but it didn't light his eyes.
I don't think that's true, Elle. In fact, I think you hardly know me.
With that, he walked away, went back to his desk and sat down. Putting on his headset, he pulled a sketchpad out and began drawing. Ellie rolled her eyes. Peanut didn't smile.
He's going all Napoleon Dynamite again, Ellie said, irritated.
There's a rumor going round town, P said. I heard it this a.m. myself, from Rosie at the diner, who heard it from Ed at the poorhouse.
I'm guessing it's about me?
It seems a certain female police chief was seen kissing a certain famous out-of-towner last night, right in the parking lot in front of everyone. Oh, and did I mention his track record with women?
She made a tisking sound.
Not good.
Ellie winced. Actually, he kissed me.
Well, that makes a world of difference.
Peanut sighed and shook her head. It was exactly how she responded when one of her kids was making her crazy.
Ellie, you're a fool. There, I finally said it. I've been waiting for you to wake up and see what's in your own backyard. We both have. But clearly, that isn't going to happen. A good-looking felon comes to town and you're all over him like Gray on Seattle. In fact, I hear wedding bells now. Who cares that he's going to take Alice away from Julia and break all our hearts? What matters is he's got a great smile and a big dick and he knows how to use them both.
In the first place, it was a kiss, not a blowjob. In the second...
Peanut walked away from her. Ellie ran after her.
Come back here, damn it! You can't say something like that to me and just walk away.
She grabbed Peanut's arm and spun her around. There were reporters clustered around them, but Ellie didn't care.
I didn't go for him, Peanut.
From what I heard...
Did you hear me, damn it? I didn't go for him. Zero, zip, nada. He did kiss me, and I could have turned it into something, but I didn't. He's going to take Alice from us, for God's sake. How can you think I'd sleep with him?
Peanut frowned.
Really? You didn't?
Kept my jeans zipped, as my dad used to say.
Why?
It was Ellie's turn to frown.
Alice is more important.
Nothing used to be more important to you, Elle, than a good-looking man.
Things change.
Ellie thought about that. It made her smile, feel free.
It's about damn time.
Smiling, Peanut slung an arm around her. Together, they headed back to Peanut's desk.
Hey, what did you mean, we? You said we both have been waiting for you to see.
Peanut shrugged.
You're smart enough to prove George innocent. You damn sure can open your eyes and see what's right in front of you. Someday you should think about the people who love you, Elle.
She looked down at her watch.
Hey, aren't you supposed to be in court?
Ellie glanced at the clock.
Shit, George is already gone.
She ran for the door. By the time she reached the courthouse, it had started to rain. Cold, icy drops that fell from a sad, gray sky. She parked on the street out front and ran up the steps. At the closed door of the judge's chambers, Ellie knocked. "Come in." She opened the door to a large, austerely decorated room. Books lined all the walls. A huge desk dominated the center of the room. Behind it sat the judge. Julia stood near the corner beside a huge potted plant. Both attorneys were seated in front of the judge's desk. George stood all alone on the left side of the room. "Everyone is here," the judge said, putting on her glasses. "The circumstances have changed since the last time you came to me."
"Yes, Your Honor," said George's attorney.
The judge looked at Julia. "I know how much you care about Brittany, Dr. Cates. You also know how the system works."
"Yes."
The words seemed to deplete Julia, leave her smaller. "I know Mr. Azell is a victim here as much as Alice is, and I hate to further hurt him, but..." She paused as if gathering her courage, then looked up at the judge. "His needs must be second to hers." The judge frowned.
"In what way?"
"She needs more time with me. She loves me, trusts me. I can..."
Her voice slipped, caught on desperation.
"Save her."
Ellie went to Julia, stood beside her.
"Will she always be a special needs child?" the judge asked gently.
"I don't know," Julia answered. "She's come so far. She's extremely bright, though. I believe she can rise above her past. But for many years, she'll need constant care and treatment."
"There must be special schools for kids like her," George said.
"There are," his attorney answered, "and other doctors who could treat her. Your Honor, Mr. Azell is a victim here. We can't compound his tragedy by taking his daughter away again."
"No," the judge said, "and I'm sure Dr. Cates knows that."
Julia turned to George.
"She has no idea who you are, George. I sympathize with you, honestly I do. I was up all night thinking about what you've suffered. But the truth is, your daughter is what matters now. Father is a concept she can't understand yet, and if she were taken from me now, abandoned again, she could regress. She'd almost certainly retreat back into silence and howling and self-mutilation. She isn't ready. I'm sorry."
She stared at him, willing him to believe her.
"Maybe you could move here for a few years. I would keep working with her. We could slowly..."
"Years?"
George looked shaken by that, as if he'd never considered it.
"You want me to stay here for years? While my daughter lives with you? While she learns to call you Mommy? And I get to be whom? The man next door? Uncle George?"
It was Julia's turn to look shaken.
"I could move to Seattle."
"You don't get it, Dr. Cates."
His voice was gentle but firm. "I love my daughter. All those years behind bars, I dreamed of finding her, of taking her to the park and teaching her to play the guitar."
"You love the idea of a daughter. I've read everything there is to know about you, George. When Alice lived with you, you were always gone. She was in daycare 5 days a week. Zoe said you were never home for dinner or on weekends. You don't even know your daughter, and she doesn't know you."
"That's not my fault," he said softly.
"I love her,"
Julia said, her eyes filling with tears.
"I know you do. That's the problem. That's why she can't keep living with you or be your patient, here or in Seattle."
"I don't understand. If I can help..."
"She'll never love me," he said. Not as long as you're around.
Julia drew in a sharp breath. Slowly she closed her eyes, battling for control. Then she looked up at George. Everyone in the room knew there was nothing she could say to that.
I'll do everything for her, George promised. Get all the best doctors and psychiatrists. I'll make sure she's taken care of. And later, when she loves me and knows who I am, I'll bring her back to see you. I'll make sure she never forgets you, Julia.
In a small town like Rain Valley, the only thing more prevalent than gossip was opinions. Everyone had one and couldn't wait to share it. Max figured that the meeting in the courthouse had barely finished when people started talking about it. He called Julia every 10 minutes. There was never an answer. For almost an hour he waited for her to call him, but his own phone remained silent. Finally, he couldn't stand it anymore. She might think she needed to be alone. She was wrong. He'd made that mistake for too long, thinking that heartache had to be borne alone. He wouldn't let her make the same error. He got in his car and drove to her house. With every turn, he pictured her. She'd be sitting on the sofa right now, or lying in bed, trying not to cry, but one memory of Alice laughing, or eating the flowers, or giving butterfly kisses, and the tears would fall. He knew. She might try to forget it, to outrun it, as he'd done. If so, years might pass before she'd realize that those memories needed to be held on to. They were all you had left. He pulled up to her house and parked. From the outside, everything looked normal. The rhododendrons that guarded the porch were huge and glossy green in this rainy season. A pale green moss furred the roof. Empty planters hung from the eaves. Behind and around the house, giant evergreens whispered among themselves. He crossed the yard and went to the front door, knocking softly. Ellie answered, holding 2 cups of tea. "Hey, Max," she said.
"How is she?"
"Not good." Ellie stepped back, letting him enter the house, and handed him the cups. "She's up in my room, first door on the left. Alice is asleep, so be quiet." He took the cups from her.
"Thanks."
"I'm going to the station. I'll be back in an hour. Don't leave her alone."
"I won't."
She started to leave, then stopped and turned to him. "Thanks. You've helped her."
"She's helped me," he said simply.
He watched her leave, heard her car start up. Then he put down the tea. There would be a time for that later. Making tea was for a relative who wanted to help but didn't know how, and went upstairs. At the closed bedroom door, he paused, then drew in a deep breath and opened it. The room was full of shadows. All of the lights were off. Julia lay on her back in the big, king-sized canopy bed, her eyes closed, her hands folded on her stomach. He went to her, stood beside the bed.
"Hey," he said softly.
She opened her eyes and looked up at him. Her face was red and swollen, as were her eyes. Tears had scrubbed the color from her cheeks. "You know about Alice," she said quietly. He climbed into the big bed and took her in his arms. Saying nothing, he held her and let her cry, let her tell him her memories one by one. It was something he should have done long ago. Formed all his memories into solid, durable things that would last. She paused in her story and looked at him, her eyes shimmering with tears. "I should stop rattling on about her," she said. He kissed her gently, giving her all of himself in that one kiss.
"Keep talking," he said when he drew back. "I'm not going anywhere."
The streets downtown were empty. Every storefront Ellie passed, she got a sad, tired wave from someone inside. 4 people had hugged her in the diner while she waited for her mocha. None of them bothered to say anything. What was there to say? Everyone knew that by this time tomorrow, their Alice would be gone. It was late when she finally left the station and headed for the river. As she climbed the porch steps to the front door that had always been hers, she felt as if she were carrying a heavy weight on her back. This was as bad as she'd ever felt in her life, and for a woman who'd been divorced twice and buried both of her folks, well, that was saying something. Inside, everything was exactly as it always had been. The overstuffed sofa and chairs created an intimate gathering place in front of the fireplace. The knick-knacks were few and far between and mostly handmade. The only difference was the collection of ficus plants in the corner. Alice's hiding place. Only a few weeks ago, the girl had rushed to that place at the drop of a hat, or the start of a big emotion. But lately, she'd hidden less and less in her leafy sanctuary. The thought of it was almost more than Ellie could bear. And if it hurt her to imagine, what was Julia feeling now? Every tick of the clock must be a blow to her. She went over to the stereo and popped the Return of the King CD into the player. It was a day for sad, desperate songs and emotional music. She tossed her purse on the dining room table. It hit with a jangly thump. She'd just made herself tea when she saw her sister. Julia was out on the porch in the freezing cold, wrapped in their father's old woolen hunting coat. Ellie made a second cup of tea and took it out to the porch. Julia took the drink with a quiet, "Thanks," and, "Have a seat." Ellie grabbed one of the old quilts from the trunk on the porch and wrapped it around her. Sitting on the porch swing, she put her feet on the trunk. "Where's Max?" Julia shook her head. "He had an emergency at the hospital. He wanted to stay, but I sort of needed to be alone. Alice is asleep." Ellie started to rise. "Should I?" "No. Please. Stay." At that, Julia smiled sadly. "I sound like Alice. Brittany, I mean." "She'll never really be Brittany to us." "No." Julia sipped her tea. "What will you do?" "Without her." Julia stared out at their backyard. In the darkness, they couldn't see much past the river. Moonlight brightened the water. "I've been thinking a lot about that. Unfortunately, I don't have an answer." Her voice softened, trembled. "It's like watching Mom die all over again." She started to say more, but fell suddenly silent. "Sorry. Sometimes..." She stood up, turned away. "I need to be with her now," she said in a small, breaking voice, and then she was gone. Ellie felt the start of tears. She tossed the blanket aside and got up. What good would it do to sit here by herself and cry? She walked down into the damp grass toward the river. Across the black field, she saw the twinkling yellow lights of Cal's house. "Someday you should think about all the people who love you, Elle," Peanut had said. Cal had always been on that list. Through both her marriages, all her disastrous affairs, and the deaths of her parents, Cal had always been the one constant man in her life. Even though he was mad at her for something, he was the one man on the planet who saw her as she was and loved her anyway. She needed a friend like that now. She was at his door in no time. She knocked and waited. No one answered. Frowning, she glanced behind her. Cal's GTO was there, hidden beneath a tan canvas cover and a smattering of fallen leaves. She opened the door, poked her head in, and said, "Hello?" Again, there was no answer, but she saw a light on down the hall. She followed it to the closed door of Lisa's study. Suddenly, she wondered if Lisa was back. The thought made her frown deepen. Nerves twisted her stomach, made her feel panicky, but that made no sense. She knocked on the door.
Hello?
Ellie?
She pushed the door open and saw that Cal was there alone, sitting behind a drafting-like table with papers spread out all around him. For no reason she could quite touch, Ellie felt a rush of relief.
Where are the girls?
Peanut took them to dinner and a movie so that I could work.
Work?
I thought you'd be out with George tonight.
I need new friends, she sighed. He was wrong for me. What do I need to do, take out a billboard?
Wrong for you? Cal leaned against his desk, studying her. Usually you don't figure that out until you're married.
Very funny. Now, really, what are you doing?
She crossed the room toward him, noticing the smudges on his cheek and hands.
When she sidled up behind him, felt the touch of his arm against hers, she immediately felt less alone, less shaky. There was a pile of papers in front of him. On the top page was a faded working sketch of a boy and girl holding hands, running. Overhead, a giant pterodactyl-type bird blotted out the sun with its enormous wingspan. He pushed the sketch aside. Beneath it was a full-color drawing, almost a painting, of the same two kids huddled around a pale, glowing ball. The caption beneath them read, "How can we hide if they see our every move?" Ellie was stunned by the quality of his artwork, the vibrant colors and strong lines. The characters looked somehow both stylized and real. There was no mistaking the fear in their eyes.
"You're a talented artist," she said, rather dumbly, she thought, but it was so surprising.
All those days while she'd been sitting at her desk, doing paperwork or reading her magazines or talking to Peanut, Cal had been creating art. She'd blithely assumed it was the same doodling he'd been doing since Mr. Chi's chemistry class. She felt suddenly as if she were losing her hold on herself. How could she have been with him every day and not known this?
"Now I know why you said I was selfish, Cal. I'm sorry."
He smiled slowly. It transformed his face, that smile, reminded her of a dozen times long past.
"It's a graphic novel about a pair of best friends. Kids. He's a good kid from the wrong side of the tracks with a mean drunk for a dad. She hides him in her barn. Their friendship, it turns out, is the last true innocence, and it falls to them to destroy the wizard's ball before the darkness falls. But if they kiss, or go farther, they'll lose their power and be ruined. I just started submitting it to publishers."
"It's about us," she said.
At the realization, it felt as if a doorway somewhere opened, showed her a glimpse of a hallway she'd never seen.
"Why didn't you show me before?"
He tucked a strand of hair behind his ear and stood up to face her. "You stopped seeing me a long time ago, Elle. You saw the gangly, screwed-up kid I used to be, and the quiet, always-there-for-you guy I became. But you haven't really looked at me in a long time."
"I see you, Cal."
"Good. Because I've waited a long time to tell you something."
"What?"
He took her by the shoulders, held her firmly, and he kissed her. Not a friendly peck or an "I hope you feel better" brushing of the lips. An honest-to-God, send-the-blood-rushing-to-her-head kiss. Tongue and all. Ellie resisted at first. It was all so unexpected. But Cal wasn't letting her run the show this time. He backed her up against the wall and kept kissing her until her breathing was ragged and her heart was beating so fast she thought she'd faint. It was a kiss that held back nothing and promised everything.
When he finally drew back, making her whimper at the sudden loss, he wasn't smiling. "You get it now?"
"Oh, my God!"
"Everyone in town knows how I feel about you."
He kissed her again, then drew back.
I was beginning to think you were stupid.
She didn't know how a nearly 40-year-old, twice-divorced woman could feel like a teenage girl again, but that was exactly how she felt, all giddy and breathless. In an instant, her whole life had clicked into place. It all fit now. Cal!
Behind them, the door opened. Ellie turned around slowly, still feeling dazed. Peanut stood in the doorway. Like flowers from a single stem, three little faces hovered beside her. Peanut said,
"Go put on your jammies. Daddy will be up in a minute to put you to bed."
When they were gone and their footsteps on the stairs had faded to nothing, Peanut's gaze moved from Cal to Ellie and back to Cal. A smile finally tugged at the corners of her mouth.
"You kiss her?"
Ellie had the thought, "Peanut knew?" and felt a flash of irritation. Then Cal was pulling her toward him, and she forgot about everything else. In those eyes she'd known forever, she saw love. True, this time. The kind that began on a cold day between two kids and lasted for a lifetime. He squeezed her hand.
"I did."
Peanut laughed.
"It's about damn time."
Ellie put her arms around Cal and kissed him. She didn't care if Peanut was watching. It wouldn't have mattered if she'd been on Main Street in uniform during a traffic stop. All her life she'd been looking for love, and it had been there all along, across the field, waiting for her.
"It is," she whispered against his lips, "about damn time."
Julia knew she was holding Alice too tightly, but she couldn't seem to let go. Neither could she think of her as Brittany. For the last hour, no matter what she did, or appeared to be doing, Julia was also watching the clock, thinking, "Not yet." But time kept moving on, slipping past her. Every second that passed brought her closer to the time when George would drive up to the house and knock on the door and demand his daughter.
"Read Alice!"
The child thumped her finger on the page. Somehow she knew exactly where they'd left off. Julia knew she should close the book quietly, say that it was time to talk of other things, of families that had been split up and fathers who came back. But she couldn't do it. Instead, she let herself hold her little Alice and keep reading, as if this were any other rainy January day. "Weeks passed," she read, "and the little rabbit grew very old and shabby, but the boy loved him just as much. He loved him so hard that he loved all his whiskers off, and the pink lining to his ears turned gray, and his brown spots faded. He even began to lose his shape, and he scarcely looked like a rabbit any more, except to the boy." Julia's voice gave out on her. She sat there, staring at the words, watching them blur and dance on the page.
"Want Alice real?"
She touched Alice's velvety cheek. Every time they read this story, Alice said the same thing. Somehow the poor little girl thought she wasn't real. And now there was no time to prove otherwise to her. "You're real, Alice, and so many people love you."
"Love,"
Alice whispered it softly, as she always did, with a kind of reverence. Julia closed the book and set it aside, then pulled Alice onto her lap so they were looking at each other. Alice immediately looped her arms around Julia's neck and gave her a butterfly kiss. Then she giggled.
"Be strong," Julia thought. "You remember Mary and the Secret Garden, and the man who loved her so much, the man who was her father? He'd been gone, remember?"
Julia lost steam. She stared into Alice's worried face and felt as if she'd fallen into the turquoise pools of her eyes.
"There's a man. George. He's your father. He wants to love you."
Alice loves Julie.
I'm trying to tell you about your father, Alice. Brittany. You have to be ready for this. He'll be here soon. You have to understand.
Be mommy?
Julia almost gave in, but a glance at the clock reminded her how short time was. She had to try again. Alice had to understand that she wasn't abandoning her, that she had no choice. She glanced over at the suitcase she'd packed so carefully last night. In it were all of the clothes and toys the town had gathered for their girl. Additionally, Julia had packed all of Alice's favorite books and a few of her own childhood favorites that they hadn't gotten around to yet. And there were the boxes that had been donated by the local families. Everyone in town had given their Alice something. How would she button Brittany's coat, kiss her on the cheek, and say goodbye? You'll be fine. Go off with this man you don't know and who doesn't know you. Go live in a big house, on a street you can't cross without help, in a city where you'll never quite be understood. How could she do it? And how could she not? No matter how she tussled with all of this, she couldn't escape the fact that George Azell was a victim in this, too. He'd lost his daughter, and found her again, against all odds. Of course he wanted to take her home, and he'd hired all the best medical professionals to care for her. Julia was terrified that it wouldn't be enough, but she didn't know how to stop the inevitable. She drew in a ragged breath and tightened her hold on Alice. Outside, she heard a car drive up.
Mommy?
Alice said again. This time it was her little girl's voice that sounded wobbly and afraid.
Oh, Alice,
she whispered, touching her soft pink cheek. I wish I could be that for you. Alice has a very bad feeling. It is like the time when him first left, and she was so hungry that she ate the red berries off the bush by the river and threw up. Julie is saying things that Alice can't make herself understand. She is trying hard. She knows these words are important. Father. Chance. Daughter. Julie says them all slowly as if they weigh down her tongue. Alice knows they mean something important. But she cannot understand, and the trying is hurting now. Julie's eyes keep watering. Alice knows this means Julie is sad, but why? What has Alice done wrong? She has tried so hard to be good. She showed the grown-ups the bad place in the woods, even went to the rocks that covered her, even though it made Alice feel so sad. She let herself remember things she'd tried to forget. She learned to use forks and spoons and the toilet. She'd let them call her Alice, and had even learned to love that word, to smile inside when someone said it and meant her. So, what is left? What has she not done? She knows about leaving. Mommies who are soon to be dead have pale cheeks and shaking voices and leaking eyes. They try to tell you things you don't understand, hug you so tightly you can't breathe. And then one day, they're gone. And you're alone, and you wish your eyes would leak and someone would hold you again, but you're alone now, and you don't know what you did wrong. Alice feels that sick stomach feeling coming back, the panic that makes breathing hurt. She keeps trying to figure out what she has done wrong.
Shoes,
she says suddenly. Maybe that is it. She never wants to wear her shoes. They pinch her toes and squish her feet, but she will sleep in them if Julie will keep loving her.
Shoes!
Julie gives Alice a sad, sorry smile. From outside comes a sound, like a car driving into the yard. No shoes now, honey. We're inside.
How can she say, I'll be good, Julie?
Always, always.
I'll do everything you say. Good girl.
She whispers it as a promise, meaning it with every piece of her. Julie smiles again. Yes, you're a very good girl, honey. That's why all this hurts so much. It isn't enough being a good girl, that much she understands. No, leave Alice, she says desperately.
Julie looks toward the glass box that holds the outside. The window.
She is waiting, Alice knows, for something bad.
Then Julie will leave, and Alice will be girl again, and she will be alone.
Good girl, she says
one more time, hearing the crack in her voice. There is nothing else she can say. She runs across the room and picks up her shoes, trying to put them on the right feet.
Shoes! Promise!
But Julie says nothing, just stares outside. 26. Ellie saw the clot of news vans parked on either side of the old highway. A white police barricade had been set up across her driveway, barring entrance. Peanut stood in front of it, her arms crossed, a whistle in her mouth. Ellie hit the lights and siren for a second. The sound cleared the street instantly. Reporters parted into two groups and went to either side of the road. She pulled around the barricade and rolled down her window to talk to Peanut. They're a roadside hazard. Get Earl and Mel out here to disperse the crowd. This day is bad enough without the media. A bright red Ferrari pulled up behind the cruiser. Ellie looked in her rearview mirror. George smiled at her, but it was faded, less than real. There was a sad, haunted look in his eyes. Reporters swarmed his car, hurling questions. What are you going to do now? Will there be a funeral? Who'd you sell your story to?
Get them out of here, Peanut, she said, then stepped on the gas.
The Ferrari followed her down the potholed gravel road. Ellie kept looking in her mirror, hoping he'd turn around or disappear. By the time she pulled up in front of the porch, her stomach was coiled into a tiny ball. She parked and killed the engine, then got out of the car. George walked over to her.
How do I look? He said, sounding nervous.
He tucked a wavy strand of hair behind one ear.
Good,
she cleared her throat. You look good. He smiled, and it took over his face, wiping away the nervousness, lighting those blue, blue eyes. Then his smile faded. He looked at the house and said,
It's time.
His voice was soft, seductive. She wondered how many women had been drawn into the darkness by it, and left there, alone, wondering vaguely how they'd gotten so lost.
I told your sister I'd pick up Brittany at 3.
Brittany. With a sigh, she led him across the yard. They were almost to the steps when a gray Mercedes pulled up behind them and parked. Who's that? She asked George.
Dr. Correll. He's going to work with Britt.
The man got out of his car. Tall, thin, almost elegantly effete, he walked toward them. His lean face showed plenty of lines, but no hint of personality.
George.
He nodded at George, then he shook Ellie's hand. I'm Tad Correll. He had the grip strength of a toddler. Ellie had an almost overwhelming urge to cold-cock him. Nice to meet you. She was about to turn away when she noticed the hypodermic needle sticking out of his breast pocket. What's that for? You a heroin addict?
It's a sedative. The girl might be upset by the transition.
You think? Ellie couldn't help looking at George. She knew it was in her eyes. The pleading, the desperate, don't do this. But she didn't say it again.
She's my daughter, he said quietly.
There was no answer to that. Ellie knew that if she were in his shoes, no force on earth would keep her from her child. She nodded. The three of them headed for the house. At the front door, Ellie knocked. Anything to put off the inevitable. Then she opened the door.
Julia sat on the sofa with Alice tucked beside her. At the foot of the sofa was a small red suitcase. Julia looked up at them. Her beautiful face glistened with tear tracks. Her eyes were puffy and bloodshot. She didn't move. Ellie was pretty sure she couldn't. At the knock, Julia's legs had probably given out on her. Max stood behind her, his hands resting on her shoulders.
"Mr. Azell," Julia said in a shaky voice, "I see you've brought Dr. Correll."
She nodded at the doctor and got to her feet.
"Your reputation precedes you, Doctor."
"As does yours," Dr. Correll said.
There was no hint of sarcasm in his voice.
"I watched the tapes. Your work with her has been phenomenal. You should publish it in the journal."
Julia looked down at Alice, who looked scared now.
"Julie?"
Alice said, her voice spiking up in fear.
"It's time for you to go now,"
Julia said in a voice so quiet they all moved a little closer to hear. Alice shook her head.
"No go. Alice, stay."
"I wish you could, honey, but your daddy wants to love you too."
She touched Alice's tiny face.
"You remember your mommy? She would have wanted this for you."
"Julie, mommy!"
There was no mistaking the fear in Alice's voice now. She tried to hug Julia more tightly. Julia worked to uncoil the girl's spindly arms.
"I wanted to be, but I'm not. No, Julie, mommy. You have to go with your father."
Alice went crazy, kicking and screaming and growling and howling. She scratched Julia's face and her own.
"Oh, honey, don't," Julia said, trying to calm the child, but she was crying too hard to be heard.
Dr. Correll swooped in and gave Alice a shot. The child howled at that, a huge, desperate wail that came from all the dark places she'd seen in her life. Ellie felt tears in her own eyes, stinging, blurring everything. Julia held on to Alice, who slowly quieted as the sedative took effect.
"I'm sorry," Julia said to her.
Alice's eyes blinked heavily. She coiled her arms around Julia and stared at her.
"Love, Julie."
"And I love Alice."
At that, Alice started to cry. It came with no sound, no shuddering, no childlike hysterics, just a soul-deep release that turned into moisture and dripped down her puffy pink cheeks. She touched her tears, frowning. Then she looked up at Julia and whimpered two words before she fell asleep.
"Real hurts."
Julia whispered something none of them could hear. She looked ruined by those quietly spoken words and Alice's tears. They all stood there a moment, staring at each other. Then Dr. Correll said,
"We should hurry."
Julia nodded stiffly and carried Alice out to the Ferrari. She looked down into the passenger seat, then turned to George. "Where's her booster seat?"
"She's not a baby," he said.
"I'll get it," Ellie said, going to the truck. Somehow, that did it to her, after all she'd just seen. Unhooking the booster seat, Alice's seat, and yanking it out of the truck made her cry. She tried to hide her face from George as she fit the seat into the Ferrari. Very slowly, Julia bent down and put the sleeping child into the car. She whispered something into Alice's tiny ear. None of them heard what it was. Then she kissed her cheek and backed away, shutting the car door gently. Julia stood face to face with George. She handed him a thick manila envelope.
"This is everything you need to know. Her nap times, bedtimes, allergies. She loves Jell-O now, but only if it has pineapple in it. And vanilla pudding. She tries to play with pasta, so unless you want a real mess, I'd keep it away from her. And pictures of bunnies with big ears will make her giggle. So will tickling the bottoms of her feet. Her favorite book...
Stop!
George's voice was harsh, throaty. He took the envelope in shaking hands.
Thank you. For everything. Thank you.
If you have problems, you'll call. I can be there in no time.
I promise.
I want to throw myself in front of your car.
I know.
If you... Her voice cracked. She wiped her eyes, said, Take care of my... our girl.
I will.
Overhead, a cold breeze rustled through the leaves. In the distance, a crow cawed, then another. Ellie half expected to hear a wolf howl.
Well, George said, we need to go.
Julia stepped back. Ellie went to her sister, put an arm around her. Julia felt frail and too thin suddenly, like someone who has been hospitalized for a long time and had only recently gotten out of bed. Max came up, too. They bookended her. Without their steadying presence, Ellie thought her sister might collapse. George got into his car and drove away. Dr. Correll followed. For a few moments, their tires crunched on the gravel driveway, their engines purred. Then there was no sound left, no trace of them. Just the wind. She cried, Julia whispered, her whole body trembling. All the love I gave her. And in the end, all I did was teach her to cry. Max pulled Julia into his arms and held her tightly. There was nothing more they could say. Alice was gone. She is in a car. But it is not the kind of car she knows. This one is low, almost on the ground, and it darts around like a snake. The music is so loud it hurts her ears. She opens her eyes slowly. She feels funny, kind of wobbly and sick and tired. Her stomach might throw everything out of her mouth if she's not careful. Wetting her dry lips, she looks around for Julie or Lely. They are not here. She feels the panic start deep inside her and blossom out. The only thing that stops her from screaming is how tired she is. She can't seem to make a big noise. He can probably hear her heartbeat. It is so loud he will probably yell at her. She covers her heart with her hand to quiet the sound.
Julie, she says to the man.
She's back in Rain Valley. We're long gone, but you're with me now, Brittany, and everything will be good.
She doesn't understand all his words, but she knows gone. Her eyes start watering. It hurts, this crying. She wipes the tears away, surprised a little that they are clear. They should be red as her blood. That's how it feels. As if she has been poked with the sharp knife again and is bleeding. She remembers bleeding.
Julie, mommy, gone. Alice, bad girl.
The man looks at her. He is frowning. She knows he will hit her now, but she doesn't care. Julie can't make it all better anymore. Just thinking it makes her eyes water more. She starts howling, softly, though she knows there is no one to hear. She is too far from her place. Her howling grows louder, more desperate.
Brittany?
She says nothing. The only way to protect herself is in the quiet. She has no one to care for her anymore, so she needs to be small and still. She closes her eyes, lets the sleep come for her again. It is better to dream of Julie, to pretend. In her dreams, she is a good girl and has a Julie mommy to love her. Sometime later, Julia had no idea when, she had lost her grip on time. She sent Max downstairs and Ellie back to work.
They'd both been smothering her all day, trying to offer a comfort that didn't exist. Frankly, it took all her strength, every bit she had, to stay here and not scream until she was hoarse. She couldn't let herself look at the people she loved, and who loved her. All of it just made her think of Alice. She stared out the bedroom window at the empty yard. Birds. Come spring, those birds would come looking for Alice. Behind her, the dogs chuffed softly to one another. They'd spent almost an hour looking for their girl. Now they were quiet, laying beside Alice's bed, waiting for her return. Every now and then, howls would fill the air. Julia glanced down at her watch and thought about how long they'd been gone. A few hours, and already it felt like a lifetime. It was 5:30. They would be nearing the city now. The majestic green of Alice's beloved forest would have given way to the gray of concrete. She would feel as alien there as any space traveler. Without her, the little girl would regress, retreat once more into her frightened and silent world. Her fear would be too big to handle. "Please, God," she whispered aloud, praying again for the first time in years, "take care of my girl. Don't let her hurt herself." She turned away from the window and saw the potted plants. Before Alice, those plants had been separate, placed as they'd been in various places throughout the house. Now they were the forest, the hiding place. She knew she should stay where she was, keep her distance, but she couldn't do it. She walked over to the plants, stroked their glossy green leaves. "You'll miss her too," she said throatily, not caring that she was talking to plants. It didn't matter now if she went a little crazy. She wasn't Dr. Cates now. She was just an ordinary woman missing an extraordinary girl. It was almost 6 now. They were probably on the floating bridge, crossing Lake Washington, nearing Mercer Island. Alice would see the snow-capped mountains in the distance and see where she'd come from. The air would smell different, too, of smog and cars and the tamed blue sound. Downstairs, the house was quiet except for the clang and rattle of Max's cooking. She went to the table that was set for 2, pretending not to see the blank space where the 3rd placemat belonged. "What are you making?" she asked Max, who was in the kitchen chopping vegetables. At the sound of her voice, he looked up. Their gazes met. "Stir-fry." He set down the knife and moved toward her. "The phone keeps ringing." "It's Ellie," he said. "She wants to make sure you're okay." He put an arm around her and led her to the window. Together they stared out at the dark backyard. The first star of evening looked down on them. She leaned against him, loving the heat of his body against hers. It reminded her how cold she was. He didn't ask how she was or tell her it would be okay. He simply put his hand around the back of her neck, anchoring her. Without that touch, she might have drifted away, floated on this sea of emptiness. But with the one simple gesture, he'd reminded her that she hadn't lost everything, that she wasn't alone. "I wonder how she's doing."
"Don't," he said softly. "All you can do is wait."
"For what?"
"Someday, when you think about her howling or eating the flowers or trying to play with spiders, you'll laugh instead of cry."
Julia wanted to be helped by his words. As a psychiatrist, she knew he was right. The mother in her couldn't believe it. Behind them, the doorbell rang. To be honest, she was thankful for the distraction. "Did you lock Ellie out?" she asked, wiping her eyes and trying to smile. "I shouldn't have sent her to work anyway. I thought being with Cal would help."
"Does it help?" Max asked. "Being with someone who loves you?"
"As much as anything can."
He nodded. Julia let go of him and went to the door, opening it. Alice stood there, looking impossibly small and frightened. She was twisting her hands together, the way she did when she was confused, and she had her shoes on the wrong feet. The sound she made was a strangled, confused howling. Seeping, bloody scratches lined her cheeks. George stood behind Alice. His handsome face was pale and seamed with worry lines she hadn't seen before.
"She thinks you let her go because she was bad."
It hit Julia like a blow to the heart. She dropped to her knees, looked Alice in the eyes.
"Oh, honey, you're a good girl, the best."
Alice started to cry in that desperate, quiet way of hers. Her whole body shook, but she didn't make a sound.
"Use your words, Alice."
The girl shook her head, howled in a keening, desperate wail. Julia touched her.
"Use your words, baby. Please."
The loss wrenched through Julia again, tore her heart. She couldn't go through this again. Neither one of them could. She knew that Alice wanted to throw herself at her, wanted a hug, but was afraid to move. All the little girl could think was that she was bad, that she would be abandoned again, just like before. And once more, she was afraid to talk. George climbed the creaking porch steps. Alice darted away from him, pressed her body against the side of the house. Her feet hit the metal dog bowls. The clanging sound rang through the chilly night air, then dissipated, leaving it quiet once more. George looked at Alice, then at Julia.
"I tried to buy her dinner in Olympia. She went crazy, howling, growling. She scratched her face. Dr. Correll couldn't do shit to calm her down."
"It's not your fault," Julia said softly.
"All those years in prison, I dreamed she was still alive."
Julia's heart went out to him. Slowly she stood. "I know."
"I imagined finding her again. I thought she'd run into my arms and kiss me and tell me how much she missed me. I never thought, never realized she wouldn't know me."
"She needs time to remember."
"No. She's not my little girl anymore. I guess you were right when you said she never was. When she was a baby, I was never home. She's Alice now."
Julia's breath caught. Hope flickered inside her, a tiny flame of light in the dark. She heard Max come up beside her. "What do you mean?" George stared down at his daughter. He looked older suddenly, a man lined by hard choices and harder living.
"I'm not who she needs," he said in a voice so quiet Julia almost missed it. "She's too much for me to handle. Loving her and parenting her are two different things. She belongs here with you."
Julia reached for Max's hand, clinging to it, but she looked at George. "Are you sure?"
"Tell her someday that I loved her the only way I knew how. By letting her go. Tell her I'll be waiting for her. All she has to do is call."
"You'll always be her father, George." He backed up, went down a step, then another.
"They'll say I abandoned her," he said softly.
Julia gazed down at him, wishing she could tell him it wasn't true, but they both knew better than that. The media would judge him harshly for this. "Your daughter will know the truth, George. I swear to you, she'll always know you love her."
"I can't even kiss her goodbye."
"Someday
You'll be able to kiss her, George. I promise you.
Keep her close, he said. I made that mistake.
Julia's throat was so full of emotion she could only nod. If this were a Disney movie instead of real life, Alice would give her father a hug right now and say goodbye. Instead, she was huddled alongside the house, trying to disappear. Her cheeks were marred by scratches and streaked with blood and tears. George turned and walked away. In the driveway, he waved one last time before he got in his car and drove away. Julia knelt in front of Alice. Alice stood there, her little arms bolted to her sides, her hands curled into fists. Her mouth was trembling, and tears washed her eyes, magnifying her fear. Julia's tears started again. There was no way to stop them, even though she was smiling now, too. Her emotions were almost too big to handle. Her whole body was trembling. Alice looked terrified. She watched George drive away, then turned to Julia.
Alice, home?
Julia nodded. Alice is home. Alice whispered,
Julie, Mommy,
and threw herself into Julia's waiting arms. They fell backward onto the hardwood floor, still locked together. Julia held Alice tightly, kissing her cheeks, her neck, her hair. Alice buried her face in the crook of Julia's neck. She felt the whispers of her breath as she said,
Love, Julie, Mommy. Alice, stay.
Yes, Julia said, laughing and crying. Alice, stay. Epilogue. As always, September was the best month of the year. Long, hot, sunny days melted into cold, crisp nights. All over town, the grass was as thick as velvet and impossibly green. Scattered randomly throughout the towering evergreens were maple and alder trees dressed in their red and gold autumn finery. The swans had left Spirit Lake for the year, although the crows were everywhere, squatted on phone lines above every street, cawing and squawking at passers-by. At the corner of Olympic and Rainview, Julia stopped walking. Alice immediately followed suit, tucking in close, putting her hand in Julia's pocket. It was the first time in weeks she'd done it. Now, Alice, Julia said, looking down at her, we've talked all about this. There's nothing to be afraid of. Alice blinked up at her. Though she'd gained weight in the past 9 months and grown at least an inch, she still had a tiny heart-shaped face that sometimes seemed too small to hold those wide, expressive eyes. Today, wearing a pink corduroy skirt with matching cotton tights and a white sweater, she looked like any other girl on the first day of school. Only the careful observer would have noticed that she had too many missing teeth for a 5.5-year-old, and that sometimes she still called her mommy, Julie.
Alice, not scared.
Julia led Alice to a nearby park bench and sat down beneath the protective umbrella of a huge maple tree. The leaves overhead were the color of ripe lemons. Every now and then, one fluttered to the ground. Julia sat down, then pulled Alice onto her lap. I think you are scared. Alice popped a thumb in her mouth for comfort, then slowly withdrew it. She was trying so hard to be a big girl. Her pink backpack, a recent present from George, fell to the ground beside her.
They'll call Alice Wolf Girl, she said quietly.
Julia touched her puffy, velvet-soft cheek. She wanted to say, no, they won't. But she and Alice had come too far together to tell each other pretty lies. They might, mostly because they wish they knew a wolf.
Maybe go school next year.
You're ready now. Julia eased Alice off her lap. They stood up, holding hands. Okay? A car pulled up on the street beside them. All four doors opened at once, and girls spilled out of the car, giggling and laughing.
The older girls ran off ahead. Ellie, in uniform, looking deeply tired and profoundly beautiful, took Sarah's hand in hers and walked toward Julia.
"Of course, you're on time," Ellie said. "You have one kid to get ready. Getting these three organized is like herding ants. And forget about Cal. His deadlines made him deaf."
But as she said it, she laughed.
"Or maybe it's me, always telling him to listen up."
Sarah, dressed in blue jeans and a pink T-shirt, carrying a Shark Tales backpack, looked at Alice.
"You ready for school?"
"Scared,"
Alice said. When she looked up at Julia, she added,
"I'm scared."
"I was scared on the first day of kindergarten, too. But it was fun," Sarah said. "We had cake."
"Really?
You want to walk with me?" Sarah asked.
Alice looked up at Julia, who nodded encouragingly.
"Okay."
Alice mouthed,
"Stay close."
Julia nodded, smiling. The two girls came together, began walking toward the school. Ellie fell into step beside Julia.
"Who'd have thought, huh? You and me walking our daughters to school together."
"It's the start of a new family tradition. So how's the new bathroom coming?"
"Cal ordered a jacuzzi tub," Ellie grinned. "It's big enough for two. He's going to start on the addition next spring. Three girls in our old bedroom is a nightmare. They fight every second."
"Have you met your new neighbors?"
"Yeah, a couple from California. They have two sons who already follow the girls around like lovesick puppies. I find it hilarious. Cal is not so amused. But I think he's glad Lisa made him sell the house. Too many memories."
"He always belonged in our house anyway."
"Yeah,"
Ellie said, sounding like a woman head over heels in love. After two expensive weddings, complete with all the trimmings, she'd finally gotten lucky in a tiny chapel on the Vegas Strip. They crossed the street and climbed the steps to Rain Valley Elementary. All around them, women were holding on to their children's hands. Julia noticed the woman beside her, a beautiful redhead with bright, teary eyes. When she saw Julia look at her, the woman smiled.
"It's my first time," she said, "walking Bobby to school. I hope I don't embarrass him by bursting into tears."
"I know what you mean," Julia said. It was hard to let Alice go out in the world, but she had to do it. As they moved down the hallway, a bell rang. Kids and parents, scattered, disappeared into classrooms. Alice looked nervously at Julia.
"Mommy?"
"I'll sit right out front all day, waiting for you. If you get nervous, all you have to do is look out the window, okay?"
"Okay."
She didn't sound okay. "You want me to walk you in?" Alice looked at Sarah, who was motioning for her to hurry, then back at Julia.
"No. I'm a big girl," she mouthed.
"Come on, Alice," Sarah said. "I'll show you to Miss Schmidt's room."
Following Sarah, Alice walked down the last bit of hallway to room 114. She gave Julia one last worried wave, then opened the door and went in. The door shut behind her. Julia let out her breath in a sigh. She wanted to smile and cry at the same time.
"Yours can't stand to leave, and mine can't wait."
"Yours didn't live through what Alice did."
"Maybe it is too early."
Ellie looped an arm around Julia, drawing her close.
"She's going to be fine."
Arm in arm, they walked out of the school and down the stairs and across the street to the park. There they sat down on the cold wooden bench and stared out at the town that had shaped their lives. The maple tree that had first welcomed Alice was a blaze of bright yellow leaves.
"What are you going to do now that she's in school?"
Ellie asked, leaning back.
"Next year, it'll be all day."
Lately, the question had arisen in Julia's mind, too. She'd had to ask herself who she was now, what she wanted. The answers had surprised her. For For almost half of her life, she'd been driven by her career. It had meant everything to her. Yet she'd lost it in a heartbeat. Perhaps she'd had some blame in that. She didn't know, would never know, if she could have changed Amber's future. But the blame wasn't what mattered. That was the lesson she'd learned. Life was impossibly fragile. If you were lucky enough to have a loving family, you had to hold on to them with infinite care. Never again would she be afraid of love. She turned to her sister.
Max asked me to marry him.
Ellie shrieked.
It's about damn time!
She pulled Julia into her arms and held her tightly. I thought I'd open an office here, too. Work part-time. There are kids who need me. Ellie drew back, wiping her eyes.
Mom and Dad would be so proud of you, Jules.
That made Julia smile. Yeah. She closed her eyes for just a moment, a breath, and remembered all of it. The woman she'd been less than a year ago, afraid of her own spirit and the danger of sharp emotions. The little girl named Alice she'd taken into her heart, and the man who dared to push past his own darkness toward the light they'd found deep in this old-growth forest. For years to come, she knew that the people of Rain Valley would talk about this special time, when a child unlike any other had walked out of the woods and into their lives and changed them all, and how it had begun in mid-October, when the trees were dressed in tangerine leaves and danced in the chilly, rain-scented breeze, and the sun was a brilliant shade of gold that illuminated everything. Magic hour. For the rest of her life, she'd remember it as the time she finally came home. Acknowledgements. Several people were instrumental in the writing of this novel. Thanks go out to Lindsay Brooks, Investigative Manager, Case Management Department, ChildQuest International. Luana S. Burnett, Police Services Officer, City of Newport, Washington. Kaney Levine, Criminal Defense Attorney and Friend. And Kim Fisk and Megan Chance, who both helped more than they know.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Magic Hour by Kristen Hanna, performed by Susan Torin, directed by Laura Grafton, engineered by Christopher Kessel. Performance copyright 2005 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc., all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please visit our website at www.brilliancepublishing.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.